Hello, and welcome to AgTech Talk, Agribusiness Global's podcast exploring the latest technology, innovations, tools, and services that are moving the crop input community forward. I'm your host, Dan Jacobs, Senior Editor with Agribusiness Global. Each episode, we talk with industry experts for their insights on ag tech solutions being developed around the world and how they could impact your business. Whether it's agricultural technology you'll find in the field, on a tablet, or in the air, we'll talk about it here. Today, we're talking with Greg Malikoff, Associate Director of Business Development with satellite company Iridium. The ag community has long used satellites for imagery and sensing to gather data about their operations, but that's not what Iridium focuses on. Instead, their system is used to ensure that all that data is available and flows without interruption at all times. Let's find out what that means for crop inputs. Thanks, Greg, for being with us today. Tell us about your satellite network, how it works. I mean, is it something you own these satellites or do you rent them from somebody?
Well, sure. So let's start out first with a little history about Iridium. So, you know, there's a lot of buzz today about satellite networks. There's a lot of new networks are called LEO networks, which means low Earth orbit. But a lot of these operators today lease space from other satellite companies. At Iridium, these are our satellites, our ground structure, our network. So it's entirely our enterprise. And we've been doing that for just over 25 years now. In fact, we just updated our entire satellite network. So there's new satellites out there delivering a whole new level of communication, capability of communication. But, you know, a lot of people know us from 25 years ago when we were with Motorola and our satellite phones. That's where our business started. But today we're really more about IoT and data connections over our satellite network. In fact, a lot of people don't know this either. We're the only truly global satellite provider of any type, any frequency and orbit. People assume satellites are global, but they're not. We are in the exclusive club of being the only one that covers the entire planet. Millions of users, companies like John Deere, Caterpillar, Trimble, Trimble, GoGo, and many others in commercial and government that are users of our network today. That network today is 66 satellites and built for on the move applications as well as static applications. So I'll spend a quick minute to tell you how it all works. So those multiple satellites I just talked about, they're always moving and they're overlapping every part of the planet. So this is a built-in resiliency and redundancy that ensures farmers or any user that they're connected to their equipment in the field, their people, their applications, anywhere, anytime. So that application on the ground, be a combine, sensor, and irrigation system, would have an Iridium transceiver built into it. And that transceiver would be sending messages, whether it's voice or IP or data, to one of those 66 satellites moving overhead, which then gets transmitted to one of our ground stations into our gateway and out to the world. That happens very fast, you know, really in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, I noticed on your website, I saw a SpaceX launch. That looked pretty cool. Must be fun to see those, your own satellites get launched into space, into the stratosphere. Actually, I guess it's beyond the stratosphere, right?
It's
in science class.
It's pretty neat. In fact, I was at that launch when it occurred. But that was launching an extra set of spare satellites that we add to add an additional layer of redundancy or network. So we have a lot of components in place that serve as backup. And so that was a launch to further enhance that capability.
Okay, very good. The other thing you mentioned, that, you know, obviously you were involved in a lot of different markets. How did you get involved in agriculture? Did agriculture say, hey, this is something we can use, and they came to you?
Well, you know, we're in the connectivity business, and it turns out that only 15% of the globe is covered by cellular signals. So the whole lot of the earth that has no connectivity. So, you know, coverage, especially in agriculture, is more important than people realize. You know, there's a promise now of technology that will allow the growers increase yields and lower the cost, but you have to be able to connect to the internet or the cloud to make this all work. So we realized we can help bridge that gap, the gap being the lack of adequate cell coverage. So to do that, we're actively working with farm equipment OEMs and providers of other technology to embed our transceivers into the product so the farmer can use that technology where the farm is, not just where cell coverage is present.
You mentioned connectivity, you know, like you mentioned John Deere, you mentioned Trimble, you know, certainly some companies that our listeners are going to be familiar with. What are some of those challenges for the farmers themselves that they need this type of network, this type of connectivity to be able to run their operations more efficiently?
Yeah, you know, from my perspective, being in the college business, it's really about having an adequate connection. You know, in the farm world, you don't have to go very far off the road, off the interstate, to realize there's no connectivity at the farm. So that's the challenge I'm hearing. There's, again, all that great technology out there. It's really the pace at which this technology is coming out to improve a farm operation is really stunning, but you got to be connected. And I think most of these applications first launch to do cellular because it's easier, you know it. But then they learn that it doesn't go far enough. And they'll come back to us and work with us to integrate this connectivity so that product could be truly global.
Yeah, I live in Northeast Ohio in a fairly suburban area where you would think I have a great signal and sometimes I don't. So I can only imagine that on a farm out in the middle of nowhere, relatively speaking, that they can have some signal connectivity issues.
Yeah, well, you know, cell networks are very expensive to build. And for the cells companies, you have to have a dense enough population to make it worthwhile. So you can imagine why rural communities and farming communities typically don't have very good coverage. But, you know, the way our network works, if you think about it like a cell phone, the way we're engineered and structured, it's like potentially having five bars of service, no matter where you are.
That would be nice. I think I should talk to my cellular provider to see if I can get that in my own apartment here. The technology, you mentioned Internet of Things, you mentioned John Deere again. You know, their combines, their machinery, all the different devices that are now used on a farm. Seem, you know, we've written many stories about precision agriculture and the technology in these machines. How does your satellite network help manage all that technology, that information?
Well, you know, if you think about it, we're basically like an enablement capability. The technology is there, but again, it's not going to do you a lot of good if you can't connect. So we're that layer that adds to the technology to make it more functional. Now, we're not there to replace the cellular signal. We're there to augment it. We're there to sit side by side with it. There's plenty of parts of the planet where we might be the only signal by which that technology could work, but there are also plenty of parts where you would use both. In cellular when cellular is available, and the technology would switch to satellite when there's no cell signal or inadequate cell signal or as a backup or what have you. So it's really, again, about expanding the reach. So use technology where you want to be, not worried about the limits of the cellular footprint.
So one of the things that you talked about a little bit when we were doing a little research earlier is the limitations to obviously to cellular signals. And you've mentioned a couple of times now that when that is unavailable, that's kind of when your solution kicks in. Am I saying that correctly?
That's correct. I mean, it's ultimately up to the technology provider on the logic that they would build into it, like when to switch and when you switch, what to send and so forth. But that's essentially it. Basically, if you have somebody that needs to connect, then that's a use case where we would play. You know, when you think about autonomy, which is, you know, the buzzword now in agriculture, that's even more relevant. You can't afford to have a single stream connection. And if that connection goes down, well, what happens to your autonomy? Even in cases where, again, uniqueness is the way our signal is engineered, our system is engineered. The other satellite providers, for example, you might physically be blocked by a barn or another piece of equipment or a hill or something, and then you would lose that autonomous connection. That doesn't happen the way our satellite network is engineered. If you block to, say, the south, our satellites to east or north might pick up the transceiver and continue to stay connected. So that's very, very relevant in terms of the capability. Most people don't think about that sort of thing. Just think, oh, you just turn it on and next. No, you have to have the right kind of system that allows you to use it in any direction, any location on the planet.
And that all happens seamlessly?
Completely seamlessly. One of the beauties of the network is that the signal is the same everywhere too, because of, again, the global nature and the way the satellites are moving. In fact, they're moving about 17,000 miles an hour at overhead. The signal in, say, Des Moines, Iowa, is the same as it is in the North Pole, it's the same as it is in Kansas, the same as it is anywhere on the planet. So that means the antennas, the transceivers, the power requirements, everything's exactly the same, which makes deployment much easier. They don't have to think about, well, this solution in Asia has to be different than the solution in Europe, which is different than North America. It makes life a lot easier.
This may be something that you've sort of addressed, or is maybe not even an issue for your organization because of the way you're set up. We've written a lot of stories about John Deere has a solution and
another company has a solution, a third company has a different solution, and they're all sort of proprietary. Is that an issue for your satellites? Can they sort of work with any technology, or does it have to be sort of integrated into the plan?
So we work with the technology providers, so they would integrate our transceivers into their solution. But you know, whether it's, you know, we'll work on an AGCO and a John Deere and this center pivot and that center pivot, we're not, technology is universal in the sense that it will work with anybody else's system. Now, it doesn't mean that you could take our transceiver and work on somebody else's satellite. Now, that, you know, the same way, you know, Verizon phone will work on AT&T, that sort of thing. But we can be integrated in just about anybody's technology.
This might be getting a little into the weeds here, but let me ask you this, since our listeners are mostly the providers of crop inputs, you know, the things that actually the farmers are using to protect and grow their crops, how can this technology be used to manage those crop inputs more efficiently?
Well, again, back to the concept of being an enabler, the solution is out there, it's already doing that for the customer, but if he can't connect, it's, you know, just a paperweight. So we team with these OEMs. I have meetings all the time year-round with various technology providers talk about adding us into their solution so it can be used everywhere. So in the promises, technology to bring higher crop yields and less hours and so forth, it's there, and we're helping to make that more of a reality for more people and more farmers, not just the ones that happen to be able to, or good cell coverage.
Does someone come to your company to, like, does the grower come to your company, or is it the John Deere is your customer? And, you know, it's a selling feature, I guess, to that grower that, hey, they have this access to this network that, you know, so it'll never be, you know, out of range, so to speak.
Yeah, it's really in a couple of ways. So we're primarily a solution provider to the John Deere's, the AGCO's, Valmarts of the world. And they would come to us, or I would go to them and seek them out and say, hey, this is something, if you add this, it really expands your reach. In some cases, the customer doesn't even know Iridium satellites on there because it shouldn't matter. They just are connecting. It doesn't matter if they're in their cell. And it might be baked into the service plan or the maintenance plan on a piece of heavy equipment, for example. Other times it might be a line item, but that's up to the technology provider and how they want to go to market. But, you know, we also have, you know, where we started our business with the satellite phones. That's still a huge part of our business, very important. Will always be part of our business. That is available at retailers across the globe should somebody want a dedicated satellite phone. There's also a new level of technology beyond phones built by people like Garmin and Zolio that allow you to integrate your Android or Apple phone to that device you might carry on, you know, hip or backpack or something, and allow you to send and receive text messages or send your location. A lot of these devices have SOS buttons built in, which you think about for a lone worker or somebody out in the field, you know, in terms of worker safety, getting injured or something, being able to hit an SOS button and again, not worry about, well, not cell coverage, the SOS isn't going to go through. So that's I would call that more consumer oriented type of prepackaged solution, but that's stand out there, but dozens and dozens of retailers, both online and brick and mortar.
Let's come back to the farming operations, the day-to-day farming stuff. Where does the satellite fit in? I mean, we've talked a little bit about this, but if you could just sort of expand on that a little bit.
Well, the satellite fits into, you know, both those levels. It could be the small operation. It just needs to be able to communicate to the workers in the field, and then maybe a sat phone is all that's needed for them. Others might be either they're using hardware that is built in, they may or may not know it's there, delivering value to me. I mean, imagine, you know, you have an AGCO tractor, you know, typically what they're doing is predictive maintenance and being able to understand the health of their machine. You know, you don't want a machine going down in the middle of harvest and, you know, AGCO service is able to know what's happening machine and be able to fix that problem before you get the harvest. I mean, imagine the payback in a scenario like that, being able to solve that problem before you lose a day or two of harvest. So those are center pivots. About another example, I know we have some center pivot companies that being able to control the center pivot without having to drive out to it. AgSense, which is all by Valmar, they have us on their AquaTrack light soil sensor. Again, imagine a grower being able to use the data off that sensor without, again, worrying, well, it might not work, I don't have cell coverage. So there are dozens of examples of that nature.
Satellites are obviously not easily accessible once they're up there, and technology is changing constantly. You know, we keep hearing about precision agriculture and all the tools and software that are available. So if a satellite needs to be updated, or unfortunately, if something goes wrong with it, well, I guess if it goes wrong, I don't know how easy they are to fix from down here.
Yeah. Well, we have 66 active satellites. And now with the launch we just had recently of 5 extra spare satellites, we have 14 spare satellites already in orbit that are just sitting there. In the unlikely event something catastrophic happens to the satellite, we can float one into that spot pretty quickly, though. But again, fortunately, the way our network is designed, let's say the satellite to the west of you went dark, the satellite to the east of you or to the north or the south is probably going to pick you up fairly quickly. And chances are, as a user, you might not even notice that there was an outage. Eventually, we'd float in a couple of days, that replacement to fill the gap. So that is something pretty creative on our part that's added a level of resiliency and redundancy that a lot of others can't deliver. Once the satellite's launched, you can't run a truck up there and to replace a transceiver or to, you know, bolt on a new transmitter. But that doesn't stop us from innovating. All the time, we are launching new features and new capabilities that don't require us to touch the physical satellite. We have 500 partners out there, various types of service providers, technology people, who integrate our transceivers into their product so they can design the product specifically for their customer set. So that innovation will continue. And in about a dozen years or so, we will do a complete refresh and launch a whole new set of satellites down the road, which will then bring many more multiples of capability that aren't there today. So, you know, one can on the redundancy part, it's like self-peeling, but on the other end, the innovation continues on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. But, you know, I want to talk about a minute about that redundancy. And it's something people don't think about till it's a problem. But just a few months ago, a major provider lost their satellite over Asia Pacific for several days. So farmers in that region, we're talking Australia, New Zealand, and all of Asia, you know, they're used to using precision planting, they're used to using auto steering, things of that nature. Those functions were gone. If that system wasn't a redundant system, you know, that's not something that we worry about on our system because, if, again, one satellite went out, you on the ground probably wouldn't notice. Another satellite's going to deliver the service.
Okay, interesting. Here, I want to clarify something, make sure I understand it. You mentioned low Earth orbit satellites versus, say, the geosynchronous, which are, you know, the ones that are really high up and stationary. Yep. Is it a cost thing, or is it that interconnectivity that you mentioned? What is the purpose of having the low Earth ones versus the ones that, you know, I mean, if they were higher, they cover more area, and could you cover the Earth without that many satellites?
Well, yeah, the geo providers, which stands for geosynchronous, they don't need as many satellites, but they're much bigger and much more expensive satellites. But it's really different kinds of missions. The geo serves purposes for global communications, that, you know, if you remember the old days of live via satellite, that those are, you know, the old-fashioned geo satellites. But they do have some inherent problems. They're 22,000 miles above the equator. So there's a very, very high latency. LEO, which is low Earth orbit, what we are, we're only about 476 miles in altitude. Well, that's 40 times closer to the surface of the Earth. So in terms of signal latency, it's almost non-existent, especially compared to geo. The other problems with geo, they tend not to be redundant, as the example we just gave you about the other provider in Asia. You know, when that satellite went dark, they were just out of service for several days. And they could be physically blocked. You know, with the curvature of the Earth and the further away from the equator, there's more physical things that can block your antenna from reaching the satellite and getting the signal up again. You know, if you're parked up next to a barn or a dense forest or the hill of, you know, geography of some sort. And the only way to resolve that is not to be blocked. You know, a tracker has to be in view of the satellite and only in view to the south. You have to have a clear view. So we're, again, engineered very differently. We work with any view to the sky. So if you're blocked on one side by a barn, doesn't matter. We talked about, you know, the other feature we have is something we call crosslinks. So all our satellites are connected to each other. But let's say there was something wrong with one of our ground stations. Well, the satellite would say, well, that ground station's out, and it would send it over that crosslink to another satellite, and maybe to another satellite, and then bring that signal down to a different ground station. So again, to the user, wouldn't even notice it. It's a redundant system. That way, the problem on the ground or a problem in space, to the user, they have no idea it's happening. They're still getting their signal. Their autonomy is still working. The ability to collect the data off a sensor, turn off a water pivot, it goes uninterrupted.
I think I've gone through most of my questions here. What else do we need to know? What didn't I ask you about?
Well, I think it's an exciting time in agriculture. I go to a lot of the events and, again, talking to a lot of these OEMs about the future and about building in iridium insert capabilities, and we're having good success there. And I think there'll be, you'll see us embedded in more and more equipment as time goes. So I have great hope for the future. I think this enablement capability is going to change lives at the end of the day.
If somebody wanted to learn more about the company, where can they go? Who should they reach out to?
Well, they could reach out to me. I am our specialist in the agriculture, agribusiness. You can always go to the Iridium website, and there is a tab on agribusiness that describes the kinds of things we talked about. And there are links on there where they could fill out and request more information, and at which point I would then get in contact with them.
Terrific. I appreciate that. We will make sure to include that in our notes that people can read about that. And obviously, they can check out the website, which is iridium.com. Right?
That's right.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Greg, for your insights. To learn more about Iridium, you can visit the company's website at www.iridium.com. That's IRIDIUM.com. To our audience, thanks for listening, and join us next time when we talk with Todd Hauser from Trillium Ag to learn about how the company uses RNAi technology to empower a new era of crop protection.